Fish coffee on ice. My first taste of real Russia started on the 6-hour flight from Moscow to Irkutsk. Westernized Moscow had been my only association of Russia until then. But, like most large urban centers, it didn't accurately represent the countryside and people. When I boarded the Aeroflot plane, I knew the real Russia was emerging. Our American group of nine sat scattered through the cabin as we began our journey across the country. The universal seatbelt sign turned off. "Elise, is your chair loose?" I asked. "Mine's been shaking since we took off." Elise rocked back and forth and then bent down to examine the floor. "I think the screws are loose on this whole row." "Yikes!" I stood and looked around the cabin. No one else had fastened their seatbelt, and a group of white-haired men sat in front of us, chain-smoking and getting drunk. "So, hypothetically, if we crashed, we'd go flying on the inside of this plane?" "Hypothetically, we'd probably hit those fat guys with the vodka," she said. We giggled, and I started coughing. The men, surrounded by puffy clowns, jested in a jovial, guttural language and grew even louder with each shot of preferred vodka. 20 minutes in, I figured out that they were a traveling band as they practiced their drunken melodies throughout the flight. My jet-lagged body got no sleep. Elise, who was my best friend at the time, was my roommate in our crowded one-bedroom flat. She and I shared a closet-sized space while the other two women slept on sofas in the lounge. Many of our nights were spent making music with guitars, laboriously washing our clothes in the tub, and memorizing words in our new language. Elise had a striking resemblance to Marilyn Monroe, naturally platinum blonde with short, curly locks. When we lived in Russia, I was in my golden blonde phase with hair falling to my mid-back. We both stood out in a crowd, even under all our bulging jackets and hats, and looked distinctly non-Russian. Elise was also an artist and decided I needed to be her escort to numerous museums, art galleries, and concerts. I often felt an intruder, as the Iron Curtain of communism had only been drawn back a few years earlier. And the instant we walked into a place, we looked foreign. At the same time, it was an honor to see an aspect of Siberia which few in the Western world had witnessed. "Okay, next stop is the Russian Orthodox Church." Elise pointed to our route on the map, and I wiped my greasy fingers onto a tissue. We were eating shashlik, a Russian kebab sold by street vendors. "That guy must be having a bad day," I said. "Catherine, they're all like that. Nobody is trying to get a tip around here," Elise said. "There's only one salesperson that I've met that was actually nice to me in this entire country." "One? Okay, maybe two." Elise sat down on a bench. Are you feeling dizzy again? You've got to get that checked out." "I'm fine." Elise rubbed her forehead and then took another bite of her kebab. "Ugh! Another piece of chunky fat. I wish they'd just stick to meat." "At least this one has meat. My friend Olya said that they see fat as a luxury." I guess this would be gourmet then." "Why are we going to this church?" "A concert. It's only an hour long, so we should get back home before it's too dark." "If it's a Russian opera, I'm not staying. I can't keep awake in those things." "It'll be good. It's art." Elise dumped the remains of her dinner into a rubbish bin and wiped her hands clean on the snow. "Let's get going. I want to be early and find seats so we don't get stared at." An hour later, we sat on old wooden pews and listened to the melancholy string quartet play its Russian tunes. The music wafted to the ceiling, swirling around us as the candles flickered, creating an ethereal effect. It was exquisite. A touch of heaven in the land of ice and snow. Since Americans were a novelty, we juggled many dinner invites to people's homes, which were always proven to be an adventure. My first memorable experience actually didn't revolve around a meal that was served. Five of us had trekked out to a remote part of the city via the dilapidated tram system. An hour into the meal, I needed to use the toilet, and it couldn't wait. The mother of the family took me down the stairs to a dark cellar after I had posed my dilemma in sign language. The stench overwhelmed me. She pointed to a full bucket of day-old urine and shrugged. She looked grave, led me out the back door, and pointed to the unlit outhouse as another option. It was negative 15 degrees Celsius and dark outside. I crunched the ice with my boots and opened the wooden door. Everything was frozen over, which included what had been recently put in the hole I squatted over. I realized just how large my jacket was, how awkward my boots were, and how frozen my fingers had become in the moment I began to slip. Previously, someone had, quote-unquote, missed, creating an ice patch where I put my feet. I tumbled back, caught myself with my hands on the side of the outhouse, and a small splinter went into my thumb. Since I wasn't prone to obscenities, a string of nice girl words came tumbling out of my mouth. Freaking flippin' stupid stagnant crap hole. I finished my business, went inside, and poured vodka on my hands, more to sterilize than to clean the splinter wound. Another day, a young girl invited Elise and I to her home for afternoon tea. She was one of our English students and was very eager for us to meet her father. When we entered her penthouse flat, we noticed a stark difference in her house to the other ones we had visited, as the decor was quite modern. The father resembled a character from The Godfather in his mannerisms, but with a Russian twist. He was also a bit too excited to meet young American women. Sveta, the 12-year-old, acted as an interpreter and retrieved photos when her father requested. He bragged of several chalets, only accessible by helicopter. The photos were of his male friends in Speedos, who had taken part in the traditional ice swimming after a time in their banya saunas. Elise and I were getting nervous. The father left for a moment and came back with bananas, loads of them. He pushed the bowl of fruit in front of us and left again with Sveta to get more chai and vodka. "Elise," I mouthed, "this is a bad, bad idea. We need to figure out how to get out of here. I'm pretty sure he's mafia." Elise slid over closer to me on the sofa and whispered in my ear, "Yeah, the bananas convinced me. I haven't seen those since I've been here. They're from the black market." "Or at least the yellow market." Elise rolled her eyes at my bad joke, while the godfather returned carrying several bottles of vodka. Sveta had a tray of shot glasses. "American women kidnapped, forced to marry Russian mafia." The headlines flashed through my head as I made a silent, wide-eyed signal to Elise. Elise faked a believable migraine, and we graciously took a bottle of vodka as a parting gift and had him drop us off in his opulent car about a 10-minute walk from our place. Fortunately, Sveta only made a few more invites to her home, which we declined before we left Siberia. Our team mostly stayed in Irkutsk, but we would take the occasional day trips to see the countryside. One clear Saturday, we ventured to Lake Baikal, the deepest freshwater lake in the world. The first part of the day consisted of a boat ride to a small island that had stayed in another era. I felt as though I'd passed through a crinkle in time, looking at buildings and ships from centuries past. The Buryat people had a similarity in build and skin color to Alaskan Eskimos. Having met true Eskimos while living in Anchorage during my childhood, I felt the world shrink on that island. It was a strange but stunning connection to see people so similar who lived on different continents. Returning to the mainland, we drove several miles down the coast to a small cafe on the ice. As it was early spring, most of the lake was still covered in a thick, frozen layer. We had brought food for lunch, but needed something hot to drink. Marcus, the most proficient in Russian on our team, went to inquire as to what was available. A little later, Marcus returned disheartened to tell us that he thought they had run out of water. A short Buryat man came chasing after him and said that if we had money, he would have something hot soon. 15 minutes later, he came holding a tray of piping hot coffees in thin plastic cups. The man stayed to watch us begin to warm up. I took a sip of the odd chicory liquid and noticed it tasted like the sea. The whole group discreetly poured out their drinks as soon as he rounded the corner. Marcus turned a shade of olive green. I think he used the water the fish were in. We all agreed and passed around mints to mask the taste, deciding it was better to remain cold than drink that horrible concoction. After we recovered from the coffee incident, we hired 2 small cars with drivers to take us across the ice to fish. 3 of us crammed in the back while Marcus sat up front with the driver in the lead car. We sped across the ice at an uncomfortable speed, traveling miles to the middle of the lake, and we skated over the whiteness with awe and fear as we clutched the inside of the rusted vehicle. Marcus made small talk with the driver.
"So when do you know if it's not safe to drive on the ice?"
the driver muttered a response in Russian. Marcus turned to us with the translation. "He says they stop driving when one of the cars falls through a crack in the ice." We were all quiet, our eyes scanning the lake for cracks. We hoped he was only joking. We arrived, attempted ice fishing, and of course caught nothing but a little Russian culture. We drove back that day, putting in our pockets a wedge of life that few, outside of Siberia, have ever experienced. To boost morale on the 3-month trip in Siberia, our group decided halfway through to start exchanging gifts. We drew names, which we kept secret, and then found each other presents. The package was wrapped in a Russian newspaper, and inside was a wooden box tied with string. It had a distinct, familiar scent. "Marcus, how did you find this? You know I love Earl Grey." Marcus puffed out his chest, obviously proud of his discovery. "I figured you needed something different. It wasn't easy, but I found it when I was out and about." "I'm so tired of Russian chai. This is going to be a great change. Thank you." I opened the package and smelled the scent of the tea. "That was really thoughtful. How expensive was it?" Marcus crouched down, shook his head slowly, and pushed his brown fringe back. "Not telling. My gift to you." I drank the Earl Grey every morning. I knew it had been costly, and I savored the comfort from home. The box would last me through the rest of the trip. 2 weeks later, we opened our gifts again.
"Oh, wow! More Earl Grey! Marcus, you must have gotten my name again."
"Yeah, I knew you liked it. I wanted you to feel special." He placed his hands in his pockets and rocked back and forth on his heels while he watched me.
"Thank you. I now have more than enough for the trip, and I can share. Very thoughtful. Anybody here want a little?"
My flatmate Elise made eye contact and moved her lips into a smirk. I didn't tell Marcus that I was beginning to tire of it, but felt obligated to drink it since he had made such an effort. We also had a little space in our flat, so I couldn't hide it away or throw it in the bin, as he asked for it whenever the guys came over. We drew names again. 2 weeks later, I could smell the gift on the table just a few feet away and hoped it wasn't for me.
"Marcus, you must really like this stuff. Earl Grey, eh?"
"Yeah, it was pretty hard to find this time. I had to get one of the translators to help me a bit. Kind of an ordeal, really."
"Thanks. You shouldn't have. I still have plenty."
"I know. I just wanted it to last. Here, I'll go make us some. Do you like sugar in yours, Katie?" Marcus opened the box and headed for the kitchen.
"Sure."
I swallowed and curled my lip as the girls stifled a laugh.
They knew that I was sick of the stuff but didn't want to hurt Marcus's feelings. I drank Earl Grey until the day we left. When I put the last box in my suitcase, I thought I could keep it as a reminder. I admit that though I enjoyed Russia, I got a bit teary-eyed on a return flight when an American stewardess asked if I needed anything else after handing me and Elise each a personal pizza. I'd missed the kindness of American-style customer service. And when I opened my luggage back in Texas, the smell of Earl Grey overpowered me. I haven't had a cup since. Elise and I went our separate ways for a short time after her move to another city for a job. And after the announcement of her engagement, I attended a party. We hadn't spoken for years, and I was eager to catch up. Moving from one friend to another, Elise was slowly making the rounds among her guests. I wasn't in a hurry, so I sat down and ate various nibbles while watching Elise chatting. Though her hair was still the same short blonde curls, she seemed really different. Her smile was noticeably lopsided, and she kept turning to one side whenever someone spoke. I made space on the sofa and gave Elise a brief hug when she finally sat down beside me. We caught up on our jobs, and I told her about the opening of one where I work since she was moving back. And then she asked me if I had heard what had happened to her. No, I really don't know. Do you remember the dizzy spells I had when we lived together? Yes, they always scared me a bit. I kept bugging you to see a doctor. I didn't have insurance, so it wasn't until I moved to Dallas with my job that I could afford to. Elise made another odd grin. It turns out I had a brain tumor. What? I lost hearing in one ear and feeling from here to here. She pointed to the part of her cheek and mouth. But I'm alive, and the whole thing has helped me see that my fiancé was the one. How so? Anyone who would stick with you through multiple surgeries has got to be someone special. It was a long recovery, but now we're ready to get married. Can't wait. We continued to catch up on old friends and each other's lives. When I left, I couldn't stop thinking about what she'd gone through. Elise had experienced the ugly and the beautiful. Today, she has 3 kids and is still a prolific artist and writer and involved in medicine. Like Elise, walking through the ugly things of life has helped me appreciate the beauty. Every country has both, probably every person as well. At least I know I have each. Sometimes the scales slant to one side more than the other, but what makes life more full is living through both. I'm glad I took the risk, as the genuine friendships and the depth of culture will stay with me for a lifetime, along with the now humorous episodes. I'm not sure if I'll ever go back, but I'm richer because of it. I'm also firmly convinced that it's still a bad idea to get involved with the Russian mafia or to drive on ice in late spring.